Welcome to the Baldy and the Bleachers podcast, a Husker-themed broadcast so compelling and insightful, they didn't want it anywhere near the radio. Here's your host, Tony Michaels.
Oh, my!
How did he do it?
Go Big Red.
Take it away, Baldy.
I would like to introduce you now to one of my good friends, Preston Bunch, all the way from Colorado, joining me on the phone. The reason why I wanted Preston on for this very first podcast is that really Preston made a big change in my life, I think for the better. I was an industrial organizational psychology major at the University of Nebraska. Absolutely hated it. I had a friendship with Preston, and he was doing the sports broadcasting, and I was just enamored by the whole thought of doing this for a living. So, Preston Munch, I'd like to welcome you to the Baldy in the Bleachers podcast. Preston, how you doing, bud?
Fantastic, and I appreciate that opening, and it's great to be back on the air with you, and we had some great times, and we started off as friends in the dorms, and next thing you know, we're in the broadcast booth for several years, so it's great to be back on the mic with you.
One of my most favorite moments on air was starting a sports show with you down in Lincoln. It's just nice to have college football back, isn't it, Preston?
It is. Nothing beats on-campus college football.
First of all, this is year three for Mike Riley, and how do you think has been the fit there in Lincoln for Mike Riley?
Well, certainly was a huge transition in personality and style going from Bo to Mike Riley. But, God, the guy's just hard not to like. You watch him, and you know he's a guy you could trust your kid with. You could trust your kid to be with him for 5 years because you know he's going to take care of your child. And he is a guy that I've really enjoyed. And this is a big year. 6-7 year one. He wins 9 games last year, but let's be honest, it did not finish well. Iowa fans will remember that game, and Husker fans will remember that game and the Tennessee game. Those two games, Nebraska gave up 78 points. So, Mike Riley, if you look at where he started and where he's at today, he's really scrapped on his original plan with this program. And so year three, it's a big one. Now the roster is about half of his guys. He's had some really good recruiting classes, and he's got the quarterback now that can run his style of offense. This is the first year we could really evaluate Coach Riley.
Of course, this time of year is perfect for drinking the Husker Kool-Aid. But if you could, Preston, we're going to start you with an optimistic tone if you're a Husker fan. Give us reasons for optimism for the Huskers this season.
Well, I think it has to start at quarterback. Husker fans, you loved his commitment to the program, but he certainly had his ups and downs in Tommy Armstrong. He's a guy that just struggled to make the critical passes. And Coach Riley, a lot of people think about his offense, big plays down the field. Well, he's actually more of a kind of a dink style, quarterback style play. And he likes those short middle passes. He likes the quick 5-7 yard passes, not necessarily the big top thrower offense. So I think with Tanner Lee being a pro style quarterback, he has an opportunity to run his offense. Now, Tanner Lee, some people are going to say, he came from Tulane. He can't be that good. And yes, he didn't have some great numbers at Tulane, 23 touchdowns, 21 interceptions. But you got to understand, at Tulane, not a lot of skilled players, and he got sacked 51 times in 2 years. He had broke his fingers twice. He had to realign his shoulder. He had a concussion. So the guy was never playing healthy. So he's had a year now to learn the system, to get healthy. Guy's got a big arm. He's a fifth-year junior. Husker fans, I think, now are hoping he has a great year and stays for another year. So for me, Tony, that's a huge reason for optimism because this is a guy that has got all the talent, but, it comes down to see how he plays on the field.
One of my points of optimism, also one of my stressors for the year, Bob Diaco and the new defensive scheme has the potential to make things easier for the defensive side of things, but also it's always tough switching over to a new defensive scheme. What are your thoughts on Bob Diaco and the new defense?
He was one of the hot assistant coaches for the last 5-6 years. In 2012, he had that Notre Dame defense playing unbelievable. That 3-4 defense, they finished 7th in the nation in total defense. And he's a guy that, Tony, when you look at Nebraska football, the other day I saw someone walking around in a Grant Wistrom jersey. And I said, gosh, I want to get back to those days. And it was the energy. It was the fire. And we've lacked that. Lincoln has lacked that from the defensive side. You have it in Bob Diaco now. You know, Coach Diaco, he's got so much energy and fire that you cannot help but play with 100% energy. And I love the guy. You listen to his interview, but you can hear it in the player's voice. They want to play for him. So I'm excited by him because, like I said, it was an embarrassing finish to the season. So, and the 3-4 defense, you know, it is made to get athletes on the field. You know, it's not easy to recruit 6'2", 320-pound kids. So this type of defense allows you to get those 6'2", 225, 230-pound guys that run 4.6 40s on the field. Tony, when you watch that Ohio State game and the Wisconsin games for the last couple of years,
I'd rather not.
We lack speed. Yeah, we lack speed. And this defense allows you to get speed on the field.
One of my pitfalls for the season moving forward is this gruesome schedule at Oregon, of course, Wisconsin, Ohio State, and Penn State. You have four marquee matchups this year. I think that's going to be a big challenge moving forward this year.
It is, especially, you know, the second game of the year. They go to Oregon, and that's never easy. It's not the same Oregon Ducks of years past, but still, very difficult place to play. So I think that's going to be an interesting game, but I think the schedule's tough, you know. I'm going to be out to Penn State for the first time in a few weeks to see that atmosphere. Nebraska plays there later, so you're right, Tony. Not an easy schedule this year.
Preston Munch joining us on the phone once again. The Baldy and the Bleachers podcast, just starting things off here. Before we leave you today, you talked about Grant Wistrom. Who is your favorite Husker of all time?
You know, it's always hard when you sit there and dive into it. And I know for you and I have talked about some of your favorite Huskers. But, you know, for me, probably I love Grant Wistrom. He's a guy that, it's funny because when you asked me to do this, that day I saw that jersey. And I thought, there's a guy that had energy.
Yeah.
You know, here he is. He's a Midwest guy from Missouri. And he came from a great family, and he had a great work ethic. Classy guy. He had, you know, was a great student. So he was a guy that just transcended that defense and that team. And for me, he was a guy that, I mean, he was 100%. He brought some of that Trev Alberts back to Nebraska. So for me, he was one of my favorite players to watch while I was there in Nebraska, and certainly gave us some great memories.
Preston, I appreciate your insight. Big fan connecting with you once again, and keep up the good work there in Colorado.
You do the same, Tony. It's a pleasure.
I love this time of year. College football season underway. And I remember growing up, I would always listen to Husker football games with Lyle Bremser when he would call Nebraska and Oklahoma. Those are some of the earliest memories kind of stick with me. And I always felt a certain emptiness when Nebraska and Oklahoma ceased to play. And then there was that rivalry with Colorado that had its high points. K-State after that, Texas. I think Iowa and Nebraska has the potential to build to one of those levels. And be interesting to see if the passion for that rivalry will continue. Right now it's my honor to welcome in another good buddy of mine, Travis Morgan. Travis, just talking about the elevation potentially of Iowa and Nebraska. I think the next podcast will feature on Husker fans and Hawkeye fans and their strange relationship together here in the Midwest. But you think it has a possibility to grow to like Nebraska-Oklahoma level or like Nebraska and your favorite squad, K-State level?
Oh, you had to drop that one. Yeah, okay.
I did, yeah.
I don't think it'll ever quite be on the level of Nebraska-Oklahoma. And I think that's because with what you had with Nebraska-Oklahoma was that game was essentially, for the majority of the late 70s and the entire 80s, was a game that the winner went on to play for a national title. So there was so much more on the line for those teams because they were so good. They were elite. And, you know, now those teams are not the elite of college football. You have two teams that are more or less battling to maybe be their side of the conference. As far as the national scale goes, you don't have all that buildup as the game of the year or the game of the century like you had Nebraska-Oklahoma. So I don't think it'll be there. I do think that it has started to become more of a rivalry than I would have ever thought it would when this whole thing got started because, let's face it, when this whole thing began, Nebraska was on a completely different level than Iowa. Nebraska was beating Iowa every time fairly handily. Nebraska was still considered one of the big boys of college football. since then, things have changed a little bit, obviously, you know, and Iowa has won some football games. Tony, if I could put on a level of something out there that maybe Nebraska fans could look at and say, okay, I might want to put it on the Nebraska-Colorado rivalry, because I think those were teams that were very good, battling for conference titles back and forth. The fan bases really didn't like each other. And I don't think there's quite that hatred.
I think there is that hatred.
You think there is?
I think it's alive and well right now, and I think it's something that's grown over the past 2 years with Iowa getting the edge over Nebraska. But I think it's been amped up, and I think you're right with Nebraska-Colorado. I think that's an apt comparison.
Yeah. You know, Nebraska didn't like Colorado. Colorado hated Nebraska. I will never forget the story of a fan, Nebraska running, just blowing Colorado out. And there was one single fan up in the Nebraska corner, and they scored again, and Nebraska fans were waving this flag, and a Colorado fan reached into his pocket, broke out a lighter, and lit the Nebraska flag on fire.
Oh, man.
And one of my friends is a state patrolman that was working the game that day, and he said, let's just say this. It took us a very long time to get up to break that fight up. They took their own sweet time getting up there to save that Colorado fan. You know, I think that you're right. The rivalry is definitely up its ante and up the notch since Iowa has become relevant and become good. And that's what that rivalry needed.
I talked to my buddy Preston Munch earlier in the podcast, and he said his favorite Husker player of all time was Grant Wistrom. Now, for me, without a doubt, Matt Turman. I was at that game when they went down there to K-State in 1994, and Turman was a third-string quarterback, Preston to duty. I always like symbolically what he represented, maybe not the most gifted athlete out there in the state of Nebraska, but maximized his potential. That's someone I always looked up to, and now he went on to become a high school coach, and that was, for me, my favorite Husker. So, Travy, the spotlight's on you. Who is your favorite Husker of all time?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned Matt Turman, because I've been thinking about this for a while since you asked me this question a few weeks ago or so, and I've been racking my brain. You know, when it comes down to it, I really think Brooke Behringer, to me, after reading the book that his mom wrote and everything, he was right in the heyday of Nebraska ball for me. I mean, I was in high school about the same age. He was a little bit older than I was, but they were doing great things when I was a junior, senior in high school or so. I think just the way that he led that team in 94, and in that game where Turman was doing well, but Kansas State was either ahead or tied at halftime, and Nebraska couldn't move the football on Kansas State. And Brooke Behringer, who was not going to play, was just an emergency quarterback at that time because he had a collapsed lung from the game before, went into the game with a collapsed lung and just shredded Kansas State. To me, just the way he handled the whole thing his senior year with Tommy Frazier, and how he led them to a national championship game and then played well in the national championship game and all the things he did on and off the football field. It's like 1A, 1B, probably Frazier and Behringer. They can flop either way, but I think Brooke Behringer represents a lot of what Nebraska fans love about their team too. Hardworking, doesn't talk a lot of trash, and is just a good old boy that really was able to, you know, maximize his effort as well and turn it into something special. But Tony, let's be honest. Matt Turman, he did play, and he got the job done, but you could have played quarterback behind that offensive line that year and probably won at least two or three games.
I think it's funny that Nebraska's had a history of 120 years, and of the three Huskers we named in this podcast, three were all from the same 94-95 team.
Right. So, another guy that I really liked, Amon Green, I think was also probably my second favorite Husker, or you know, right there, just because he's an Omaha Central guy that went in and just did such great things for Nebraska too, and went on to have a great pro career as well. But yeah, Behringer, Frazier, Amon Green were definitely part of that legendary group that went through.
Flipping the switch now to the current squad, and if you could, give us reasons for optimism if you're drinking the Husker Kool-Aid.
I think obviously, I'm sure everybody's on board with this, but Tanner Lee is a reason for optimism. You know, if you have to probably go back to Joe Gans,
wow,
to find a quarterback at Nebraska that could flat out sling it. And I know people like the Joe Gans. Look at Joe Gans' stats, everybody, and look what he did. Joe Gans fired the ball around the yard. I was there when he scored seven. He threw for seven touchdowns against Kansas State one year. And the Josh Freeman led Kansas State Wildcats.
That's
by the
right.
way, Memorial Stadium. People forget how good Joe Gans was. Joe Gans was a heck of a quarterback at Nebraska. And we haven't had a guy like that that can flat out throw it around the yard and make things happen probably since Joe Gans. This is supposed to be that guy.
Clearly, you're forgetting about Sam Keller.
And this is where I was going with this. Thank you for proving my point, Tony, was Sam Keller, who Gans stole the job from, because Keller was pretty much promised the starting job by Callahan when he came in, no matter how bad he played. And we were all excited about how great Sam Keller was because he was supposed to be this pro-style quarterback that could flat out get it done. And what happened was he wasn't as good as everybody thought he was going to be. And so we had to live with Sam Keller for a while until Joe Gans replaced him. This is supposed to be the second coming. This is supposed to be a guy that can really sling it, really spin it, and be a pro-style quarterback. So I think if Tanner Lee can stay upright and the offensive line can hold it together and give him some time to throw, I think that's a reason for optimism for Nebraska. That's number one.
Okay, the reason that'll keep Husker fans up at night this year is...
Wow, that's a good question. I'm going to go here with this and just bear with me, but the danger of slipping into even a deeper national relevance for Nebraska, because you look at that schedule. It's now, granted, it's a positive thing they get these games at home, but they get Wisconsin and Ohio State back-to-back games at home. Iowa's at home. Their schedule is not a cakewalk schedule, for sure, especially back-to-back weeks, Wisconsin and Ohio State. Now, if we've seen how Nebraska's played against Ohio State in recent years, and it has not been pretty. In order for people to start taking Nebraska seriously again, they've got to play with a team like Ohio State and push them to the level and push them to the end and make it a football game, because they're college football's elite. When you go and play college football's elite, you can't get punched in the mouth and get knocked out in the first quarter. And that's happened a bunch of times to Nebraska. When they play good teams, it hasn't been close. Nebraska needs to get back to that. They got to be competitive in the big games, possibly steal some here and there. That window is really starting to shut as far as Nebraska's relevance, where people used to always hear the word Nebraska and think college football, and that's slowly starting to slip away if it hasn't slipped away already.
Travis Morgan, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for appearing on the Baldy in the Bleachers podcast.
I love that, but can I give one more thing about the reasons for optimism?
Yeah.
I love Bob Diaco, by the way.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
I think it's a terrific hire. I think a lot of guys have to take that jump to head coach, because head coaching jobs don't come open very often. He got a head coaching job. It didn't work out well for him. But some guys are just meant to be coordinators opposed to head coaches. Look at Wade Phillips. Wade Phillips is a tremendous defensive coordinator. Not a great head coach, but he's a tremendous defensive coordinator. I think Bob Diaco has the potential to go on and be a great head coach in the future. Maybe he was a little young for that job and inexperienced, and he was also in a tough spot. He comes into a place like Nebraska where he's going to have some talent. I think Bob Diaco, talk to any of the guys that play with him in Iowa, like John LaFleur is my neighbor here. John LaFleur was on that team with him at Iowa and said, that guy is an absolute genius who understands the game as well as anybody, and he will definitely help Nebraska. And that killed John LaFleur to say that, because I don't know anybody that hates Nebraska more than John LaFleur. For him to say that Nebraska will be better on defense because of this guy means a lot. I think Husker fans waiting for those black shirts to come back, hiring Bob Diaco is a great first step in doing that for them.
Travi, I enjoy listening to you, and a very talented broadcaster, and appreciate the insight on this podcast.
Always great talking to you, Tony, and it's good to talk Husker football with a guy who actually knows what he's talking about a little bit and doesn't wear the red-colored goggles, if you know what I'm saying.
Although I might have to put those on if they go off to a good start here.
You've had a sip here and there, and I can't fault you for it. We all have. It's okay.
It's just that it's better to live life optimistically. You know what I mean, Travi?
I totally agree. It's like, you know, I remember the days when we used to walk into a season and go, man, I think the Huskers got a good chance of winning 11, 12 games.
That's right. As I told everyone at the recent Toby Keith concert, I say, how are the Huskers going to do? I say, 10-2, but I've been drinking since early this morning. So
Right. Yeah, I've had the red Kool-Aid that's been spiked since about 9 a.m.
That's
so
right. Good for optimism.
Well, talk to you soon.
Thanks so much for checking out the Baldy and the Bleachers podcast. And you can contact me on Twitter, KSUXTonyM. On Facebook, Tony Michaels, or Tony, the letter N, Candace. If you have any ideas for future podcasts, send them my way. And thank you so much for consuming the very first Baldy and the Bleachers Podcast. Copyright 2017. All rights reserved.